Take it away.
Good morning, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Mary Jo McCullough. I'm the Senior Manager in Student Accounts. And I just want to welcome you all to this wonderful session. I met some of you coming up in the escalators. And yes, Student Accounts is exciting, and we are excited to be here to train you on our module. Money does matter, and it's a very important part of the university. We collect about $180 million a year for the university and assess that amount as well. I'm only given 2 minutes, so I'll be very quick. if I go over. But I just wanted to reassure you that we're all here to support you in the Student Accounts module. It is fairly complicated. And Jessica is a wonderful trainer, and she's prepared a terrific module to take you through all of Student Accounts. There's a lot of detail, but don't be too worried about that, because it really will be on-the-job training that you'll get to understand it all. So this is an introduction. We don't expect you to know everything the minute you leave here, so don't be too concerned about that. As I say, we're all here to help, and when you do stages through the Student Accounts area, it will all become clear, we hope.
Thank
Take
you.
It away.
So I'm Jessica. I'm a manager in the Student Accounts office. I will be doing the training this week and next week for the Student Accounts module. Again, what Mary Jo said, to reassure you, it is a lot of information. It's going to be new for a lot of people. We understand that. There's going to be job shadowing, and Student Accounts is a resource. I have no problems answering questions at any time. I've been in Student Accounts for 2 years now, and I still go to Mary Jo when I don't know something. So I don't expect everyone to know everything up front. Just, we're going to learn about the basics. You're going to learn about what your resources are. And when you have questions, I just encourage you to ask them. Okay, so the first thing we're going to talk about, probably for actually the first half of the morning, is what is charged through the student fee account. It's more than just tuition and fees, and within tuition and fees, there's also lots of different categories and types of fees. This is a general list of what is charged through the student fee account. First, we're going to look at charges that are assessed through fee assessment, which is rules that we've built into Banner that look at a student's record and decide how much they're going to charge them. Mary Jo is the one who's in charge of building those rules, and they need to be built every term. There's about 25 to 2,800 rules that have to be changed every term. So this is the first section that we're going to talk about. So tuition. Tuition is usually the most expensive part of what a student is going to pay while they're at McGill. It is mandatory. If they are taking a course, they are going to be charged tuition for it. For most undergraduate students, it's charged per credit, which means there is a set amount per credit, which is determined every year, and the student is charged that based on the number of credits they're taking, whether it's 3 or 18 credits. For graduate students, it works a little bit differently. They are either charged per credit, or they can be charged a flat rate, which is equivalent to 15 credits. And that depends on what their class is. And that's something that I know will be covered in the grad studies training later on, like what determines a graduate student's class. For our purposes here, it's the class that drives how much they're going to be billed. And on top of whether they're graduate or undergraduate, there's also other aspects that affect how much they're going to be billed. The first is their fee residency. You guys have already done your legal documents training, so we know we have Quebec residents, out of province residents, international students, as well as Quebec government exemptions. Okay? Those four categories of students are charged at different rates, except for Quebec and Quebec exemptions, which are charged at the same rate. So if a student is an international student, they're being charged one rate. For their best friend who's in their same program and they're a Quebec student, they are being charged much, much less. I don't want to get into the details of how many dollars and cents it is for a Quebec student versus an international student. Just to give you the range, Quebec is 65-60 a credit. The lowest international student is about $400 and change per student. So it's a very big difference, which is why, for those of you coming from enrollment services, know when you have students coming to the front counter asking, how can I become a Quebec resident? It's because the money is driving them to do that. Okay. The other thing that drives what they're charged, we talked about, is whether they're a graduate or undergraduate student. In addition, it's what program or major that they have. And for international students, it matters what is their first year that they're registered. So international students are charged at a much higher level. Now, we all know that MELS regulates what we get what we have to charge or allowed to charge students. And we obviously want to charge as much as we possibly can to get as much money for the university. So there are certain programs that are considered deregulated, which means MELS is not telling us how much we can charge. The university is deciding how much we can charge. And that gets driven by what we think the market will bear. It's that simple economics. So for the programs that are deregulated are what we consider the more professional programs, like engineering, science, law, and management. So for example, an art student, which is a regulated program, gets charged for 30 credits for a year. Their tuition is going to be a little bit more than $13,000. For a BCom student, which is our most expensive program, the same undergraduate student, same 30 credits for the year, is going to be charged $23,000. So there is a difference, math right, is that $10,000? About $9,000 and change difference between the two. Okay, so it really does depend what program they're in. And as well, to make things more complicated, is that rate is going to change every year. So a BCom student who started last year is around $17,000 a year for tuition. A BCom student who starts this year is about $23,000 per year for their tuition. And a BCom student who starts next fall will be charged an even higher amount. And then each year, those tuitions go up by a certain percentage. I don't expect anyone to remember the numbers. I just remember BCom because it's the most expensive. Our website lists all of the amounts broken down by the different programs, as well as what the estimated increase will be every year. The other item that drives how much a student is assessed for tuition can be what we call rate codes. It gets a little bit more complicated when a student is enrolled in more than one program. We call double programs. So you can have an undergraduate student doing two majors in different programs. Or we can have a graduate student who's also doing a certificate in Cont Ed or taking undergraduate courses. So we have to decide what the rules are for how we're going to bill them. Do they need to be charged tuition in both programs? Do they need to be charged the student society fees in both programs? And sometimes it is impossible for us just to run fee assessment and for them to be charged properly. So we have a rate code that goes on their file that is like extra rules on top of what's already built. As for where you find these rules, on Thursday we're going to be looking at the different banner forms, and I'll show you what forms you can go to see. There's one form in particular that's very informative that will show you where you can find all these different points to help you understand and be able to explain to a student why they're being charged a particular way. And as far as double programs go and what they need to be billed and everything else, I don't even remember which one is which. Again, on our website, we have a table that explains which fees get charged and what tuition gets charged. Oops, sorry. Okay, so other charges that are charged through fee assessment, the next big group is called administrative charges. These are fees that pretty much go directly to the university's administrative purposes to help us function. They are mandatory and subject to referendum. What this means, again, we report to MELS, they give us guidelines. In the past year, we were told that we are not allowed to increase administrative fees more than a certain dollar value per year unless we got the okay from the students. So obviously, we didn't like the minimum that they gave us. So we, last year, went to the different student groups and said, we want to increase the administrative fees by X amount. Is this okay? Some of the student groups, and when I talk about student groups, I mean like PGSS and SSMU, approved it through their councils, and some of them went to referendum. Okay? And we're going to have to do this for every year going forward. When we talk about administrative fees, the ones we're talking about is the copyright fee, the transcript and diploma, the registration fee, and the information technology fee. Undergraduate students are charged per credit up to a maximum of 15 credits. So if a student is registered, is a real keener, and is 18 credits, their tuition, because that is charged solely per credit, would be for 18 credits, but these fees would cap out at 15. Okay. For graduate students, it depends on what their class is. If they're a student who is being charged flat rate, it'll be charged based up until that cap of 15 credits. But if they're a grad student who's only being charged per credit, these fees will also only be charged per credit, again, up to that cap of 15. And then, because we love exceptions in student accounts, the EMBA program, just to throw one out, these fees are only charged at half the rate of everybody else. This is because the EMBA program, the students are studying half here and half at HSA, so we only charge them half the fees here. Sorry, actually, just are there any questions about tuition or admin fees yet? No? Okay, the next group of fees, and everything to date, these are usually the more expensive fees that a student's going to see on their account. So these are the ones they're going to ask questions about opting out of. And so far, everything's mandatory. The student services fee, which goes to support student service activities across campus, as well as the athletics and recreation fee, which goes to support athletics, intramural sports, items like that, as well as gives students access to the gym, but not the fitness center. The athletics one, a lot of students want to opt out of because they say they're never going to use the service. Unfortunately, it's tough luck. This is something that all students pay to help support all the activities at the university. It is mandatory. The only exception is full-time staff members. Because full-time staff members will most likely not be taking advantage of student services or be using the gym or contributing towards that, there is a way for them to get exempt from this. They go to see the student services or the dean of students office, and there's forms they fill out to be exempt from it. Everyone else has to pay it, including exchange students. So if I'm a McGill student and I'm going on exchange, I pay all my tuition and fees at McGill. I have to pay these fees even though I will not be on campus to use these services. The reason for that is that we expect the students, when they're away at their other university, to have access to those same services. Those, again, I'm just trying to bring up the general complaints you'll hear from students. For undergraduate students, it's charged on whether they are registered in less than 9 credits or 9 credits or more. It's not on whether they are full-time or part-time, but on 9 credits. Graduate students, again, if they're flat rate, it's the flat rate at the higher level, or less than 9 credits or more than 9 credits. And grad med is flat rate of 15 credits, but it's for the year, not just for one term. Okay? Grad med students only get charged in the fall term for the full year. Okay. Any questions? No. Okay, student society fees. These are the fees across campus that go to support the different student groups, everything from SSMU to PGSS to QPIRG and radio CKUT. Most of them are mandatory. This is one place where students can actually opt out of fees, which they're all very excited about. But the dollar amount is usually only between $30 and $40 a term, so it's not a lot. It's only open during a 2-week period every term, and they opt out actually in Minerva. The old way of doing things was that they used to have to go to each group to opt out of $2 here, 50 cents here, $1.50 there. Now they can actually opt out of all these fees in Minerva, but only during a 2-week period. It's important that they look at what they're opting out of, because, for example, there's an arts fee that gives them access to a computer lab. And if they don't pay for this, they don't have access to use that lab. So it's important that they know what they're opting out of, because since they're not paying for it, some of these student groups are saying, well, you're not paying, I'm not going to give you the service, which is fair. Again, it can be charged in a variety of ways. And this is based on what the definition of the fee and how it was set up. It can be based whether the student is like based on how many credits they're in, like whether they're less than 9 credits or more 9 credits and more. It can be based just solely on the fact that they're registered, regardless of how many credits. For SSMU fees in particular, It's based on whether they're in the less than 9 or more than 9 category. For PGESS fees to be different, it's in whether they are less than 12 or 12 or more. Okay? Again, not things I expect you to know off by heart. It's actually some of them I found out while talking to Mary Jo yesterday. So it's just general information. Most of it's on our website. Health and dental insurance. All students are automatically charged health and dental insurance, whether they want it or not. International students, it's actually the McGill Senate that has compulsory enrollment in their international health insurance. This year it was not very expensive. It was $591 for the year, but it gives them full medical coverage while they're in Canada. They can seldom opt out of it. Sometimes you'll have students who say, but my dad who lives in California has great medical insurance that covers me while I'm out of the country. In very few circumstances can they opt out of it. They talk with International Student Services, or Nicole, to find out if they can. It can also be prorated if they're not in Canada for the full year. So, for example, you have an exchange student from outside of Canada who's only here for one term. So we don't want to charge them for the full year because they're not going to be here for the full year. So International Health Services, again, will prorate it for the year. Or you have a student who's graduating, leaving the country as of May and won't be here all summer. Same thing, they speak with grad studies. Depending on the circumstances, they may be able to cut a third of it off. The other health insurances are actually charged under a particular student group. So it depends on whether the student falls under SSMU, which stands for what, Marcella?
Student Society of McGill University.
MCSS, Sonia? PGSS? Yep, MCSS, anyone? Yes, okay. McDonald campus. Yes. It's early, I'll let this one go. How long have you been a student account? So it depends on what group they fall into, and there's different rates depending on the group. It's health and dental insurance, which is charged individually. So for an SSMU or MCSS, which means undergraduate, the health and dental insurance, they have a website that they have to go to opt out. They can opt out once for the year, or they can opt out permanently, which means for all the next 2-3 years that they're going to be at McGill, an automatic exemption or reversal of that charge will come onto the account so they don't pay for it. Okay, but there is no way to stop a student from initially being assessed for health and dental, which means there's no way for us to stop it actually initially being charged to their account. Okay? When I say assessed, I mean charged to their student fee account. Okay? Yes? I will get to that. Yeah. Very good question, Danielle. So PGSS, two things about PGSS actually, is that part-time students, graduate students, are not automatically enrolled or assessed or charged the health and dental insurance. Okay. So if they want the health and dental insurance, they go to PGSS and they opt into it instead of opting out. Okay. By the same token, both for any of these groups, for non-international students, only starting in the winter term, are not automatically charged health and dental. Okay, because typically it's only charged in the fall term. So if they want to have the health and dental insurance, they have to opt in to the program. Okay, so it's only automatically charged in the fall. Part-time students for PGSS have to opt in. And any student starting in the winter can opt in if they want. Okay. Just so you know, all these slides, because I know it's a lot of information, on top of being taped, I have notes for myself that will be notes for you as well. All the little points that I'm talking about are going to be on the slides that Ritu is going to post in the knowledge base later. So I know it's a lot of information. Please don't feel overwhelmed. Everything will be fine. It's my new mantra. Everything will be fine. Okay. Just want to make sure everything's in there. Okay, the other thing about PGSS opt-outs is that a student has to prove they are covered by other insurance not just the Quebec Medicare card, but other private insurance in order to opt out, okay? Which is typically the way it works with most plans. Like for our faculty and staff plan, I believe you have to prove you're covered in order to opt out. The same applies to PGSS. It does not apply to SSMU.
It does apply to MCSS.
See, learning something new every day. So MCSS and PGSS, you have to prove that you have other coverage. And for PGSS, there's no permanent opt-out. So a graduate student, they've done their master's here, they're here 7 years for their PhD. Every single year, they're going to have to go and opt-out of the health and dental, which makes them cranky sometimes. But it's just, that's the way the system was set up between PGSS and the insurer. As well as the opt-out periods for these are fixed by the insurer. If a student misses a deadline, they are stuck with the insurance for the year. We try to put a positive spin on it and say if you already have other coverage, you can get 100% coverage for the year because you can claim under more than one insurance plan. But if they've missed a deadline, it's too bad. And if a student withdraws, it does not necessarily automatically get reversed off of their account. It depends on the date of their withdrawal. Okay, I'm going to talk about that a little bit more once we actually start looking at specific dates. Any questions about health? Yes.
So they used to, I think, right?
Yeah, they used to. Like I used when I was at Concordia under the same thing with ASEC. I had to go and prove that I was covered. But
so do you get a lot of students who just opt out of it because they can, and then come back later and say, you know, I had to pay $1,500 when I went to the hospital. Do they realize?
Most of the time, when they're opting out, they realize what they're opting out of, and a lot of the time, their parents have told them to opt out of it. The bigger issue is they've missed the deadline and don't want it, and they're angry that they can't opt out. Yeah. Yes?
For a student who starts off as an international, somewhere during the semester changes studies to
Just to repeat it so the camera can hear, what happens, because we know that especially new students coming in don't change their status right away from international to Quebec or Canadian, what happens with their insurance? So the international health insurance reverses off, and the whatever category they fall into usually gets charged to their account. If it gets charged to their account, after the deadline to withdraw from it, they're not necessarily stuck with it. Someone from the student accounts office can speak with ASEC or PGSS on their behalf, and usually they're amenable to opting them out because there was no way for them to opt out previously because they weren't enrolled in it. Answers the question? Okay. There's also some other tricky situations with, you might have a student who is has dual citizenship between Canada and the States. So they luck out that they're being charged as out of province when they come here, which means they're not automatically getting charged the international health insurance. But their primary residence may actually be in the States, so they're not covered by a Canadian health care plan. In that case, they can enroll into the international health insurance plan. Yes. All students need health care coverage of some kind. Any other questions? Okay. Okay. There are, again, other groups of charges that are charged to the account. Some of them are charged based on the CRN or a course that a student is registered in. Okay? These type of charges may be geography field trip charges, which previously the students used to pay directly to the department, but is now being charged through the student fee account. Other types of charges, a very common one you'll get questions about, is called the Management Copyright Course Pack Fee. It's when a student, in particular management courses, they get a course pack that has case studies in it. That professor, in order to get the case studies, has to pay the case company per the number of students enrolled in their course. But of course, we all know students. They go to the bookstore, they photocopy it, they return it, they borrow their friends, they don't buy their own. So the bookstore is, say there's 40 students in a class, the bookstore only may sell 30 course packs. So the professor is losing out on 10 students that he has to pay, and they're not cheap. So what happens is for those courses, the professor tells us how much they want to charge for the course pack, for the copyright charge. We charge that individually to each student in the course, and then if they want or they don't want, they can go and buy the course pack in the bookstore. And the price the bookstore is choosing is charging doesn't include that portion of the copyright fee. So it's the price to photocopy it and copyright on other easier things to pay for copyright fees. Okay. So those are the type of things that can be charged either on a particular CRN, and when I say course, I mean all sections within that course. Other charges related to programs, what we're calling special programs, for lack of a better word, we've started taking them on in the past 6 months, I guess since the winter term. Previously, a lot of different programs, like the Africa Field Semester, there's programs in Barbados and in Panama, to name a few, that have extra charges on top of the tuition and fees that they would normally be charged. These include, sometimes include, airfare, the course for the instructor, the cost of bringing the instructor there, sometimes for lodging. And those students were paying that to the department and then paying student accounts for the tuition and fees. The drawback of that is, and some, it's not an insignificant amount of money, we're talking like $4,000 to $8,000. Part of that is actually tax receivable for the student, which means two thumbs up for their tax receipts. So for that, so they weren't getting a tax receipt because we didn't know about it. So a new mandate that's come down is that all these special programs, we now want to be billed through the student accounts office. That way we can include the proper amounts on their tax receipts. It's a benefit to the student. It's a benefit to the departments because then they don't have to worry about handling cash, returned items, things like that. So these often have deposits. So we have someone within the student accounts office who takes care of monitoring that deposits are coming in on time and when these charges go onto the account. And again, these are on top of tuition and fees that they would have been charged going away that term. The last group of fees that are charged either through fee assessment or manually, it's a whole slew, and I don't even think this is a complete list. You have everything from supplementary music lessons for students enrolled in the Faculty of Music, accompanist fees, fines, damages from residences. If they've moved out and there's problems in the room, we charge it directly to their student fee account. If they have supplemental exams or reread fees, supplemental exams that are done through Minerva are charged one way. There's other faculties that might do one-off rereads, and we charge them a different way. And these are all other little fees and fines that will appear on the student's account. Any questions about these? No? Okay. All right. So everything to date is stuff that student accounts is mainly responsible for applying to the account. Some of them are applied through fee assessment or through programs that are set up in Minerva, like the registering for supplemental exams, or some charged manually that a student, I'll get a phone call from a particular department that's not great with Banner, and they'll say, can you just add this $35 reread fee to a student, and we can do that for them. The next group that we're going to look at are charges that are added by the other responsible departments. It's not just student accounts and soon to be you guys who have access to adding charges and payments. There are other areas across the campus who deal in accounts receivable, is basically what we are. One of these is housing. Housing is also charged through the student fee account. So it's great. It's one bill for the student, or more specifically, one bill for their parents who were graciously paying for them to come to McGill and live in residence. What happens is that on the 1st of September, typically, all the charges for the year will come onto the account. So you're going to see September rent, October rent, November rent, and so on. They are not yet due. They go on with a future date. So it goes on September 1st, October 1st. And so the student can see all the rent charges, so they know what's coming up, but they don't have to pay for it right away, and it's not going to be subject to interest or anything else like that. It goes on through through the housing module, and if there's any corrections, students are changing rooms, anything else like that, that's all handled by housing. We have a new group this year who are not students, but are renting a room in McGill residences. Sometimes it's just random people off the street. Sometimes it is professors, not creepy people off the street, mostly normal people off the street. So you may see an account that the only thing that it has on it is housing charges because they get a bill the same way that a student does. It's just that they're not a student. The other thing that gets done through the student fee count is meal plans. Now, there are some residences that the fee the student pays includes a meal plan. I think most of them are 7-day meal plans. Again, not something we expect you to know. Look at the website. But a student, it actually has a dollar value, and like the football players and the hockey players have a tendency to go through that value much quicker than your average weakly thin 18-year-old girl. And so they can top up a meal plan, okay, which means they can add more dollars, and it basically just it's an account that's attached to their student ID card. So the top-ups done through Minerva gets reflected on their student fee account. So it's nice that they want extra money because they're starving. They charge it to their student fee account. They don't have to pay for it right away. So they get the dollars to buy the food, but then we bill them and they have to pay like a month from then. Yeah. And also, students who are not in residence, there's other types of meal plans that they can sign up for. And again, all charged through the student fee account. Something that's a little bit weird about the top-ups is that in order for a student to be able to go into Minerva and add a top-up, they have to have bought a top-up in the past. It doesn't make sense. So the way we get around that is that we charge them 1 cent and we pay them 1 cent. And it says meal top-ups. So it nets to zero. So you have a charge of 1 cent, a payment of 1 cent. It's zero for the student. But it's a way to activate their ability to use the top-up service through Minerva. Okay. Any questions? Housing, meal plans? Making me hungry. Okay. These are what's called a load. What happens is that there's other departments that are responsible for aspects across campus, and they want to bill the students through the student fee account. And now, instead of for the 2,700 students we just loaded a charge for their internet and phone in the room, instead of someone having to go onto 2,700 different accounts and enter these charges, what happens is they give us a file, and we load it into Banner. We have a way of putting this information into Banner through the computer and not someone having to type. These type of charges are DAS and lab charges. Anything from renting headsets to printing charges, fines when they haven't returned their clickers, as well as the really, really big one is it's called NCS Res Voice and Data Service. This is the service for their phone and internet in their room. It ranges from $300 to $500 for the year, and it's a one-time charge, and it depends on what combination of packages that they got. So we just actually that's the 2,700 that we just loaded in. And they get really confused because it only gets loaded in October, but they may have signed up for it in August, so they think they've already paid for it. They haven't. We try and send them an email to let them know. Other items that get charged, late registration fees, late payment fees, items like that. And we'll get a little bit more into fines in a bit. Questions? No? Okay. Okay, the billing cycle. I'm going to give a little bit of an analogy to explain our billing cycle. I have a Visa card, and I've just spent $1,000 on a shopping spree on my Visa card. I get a bill. It tells me I need to pay at the end of November. I go out, and I spend $500 more on a beautiful pair of shoes. How much do I have to pay at the end of the month? Demetra. I got $1,000, okay. I got a bill, okay. Then I spent $500 more. How much do I still have to pay at the end of the month? It's a Visa card.
It's a Visa card.
Yeah.
Did you pay your
$1,000? No, I haven't paid anything. I want to know.
$500?
Close. I only have to pay $1,000 because that was what I was billed. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I get a bill, I have to pay that bill, but in the meanwhile, I'm still using my credit card. Because I love my credit card. So McGill, our billing cycle works the same way. So we send a bill, but we've just seen there's tons and tons of charges that go through a student's fee account. And we don't expect them to pay exactly what is owing. We only expect them to pay what was billed. Okay? So just visually, apparently I have questions first. What is the billing cycle? Our billing cycle, we call it a monthly billing cycle, in that we bill at the beginning of the month, means we send an invoice to the students, and that bill is due at the end of the same month. Okay. The only exception is the December bill, because we're closed at the end of December, it's due at the beginning of January. That's the only exception. It is a monthly billing cycle, but that does not mean that tuition and fees can be paid monthly. Okay, it's a slight confusion for the students. To backstep a second. Tuition and fees are charged at the beginning of the term. So for a returning student, we billed them at the beginning of August. They had to pay their fees by the end of August. And even though it is a monthly billing cycle, we billed them, they have to pay it. If they don't pay it, they'll just get another bill that shows their previous balance plus the interest charge because they didn't pay. That's the general billing cycle. We do charge interest. Typical due dates, as I said, we bill at the beginning of the month, due at the end of the same month. The due dates, but there's kind of three more highlighted due dates throughout the year. Because yes, there is something due every month, but the big ones are your fall term tuition and fees, which gets billed for returning students at the beginning of August, for new students at the beginning of September. So that's the first big two-month period, okay? Because that's when they have to pay tuition and fees for the fall term, residence if they're in residence, as well as health and dental insurance. Okay? The next big deadline is for the winter term. So we bill at the beginning of December, due at the beginning of January for returning students, and new students we bill at the beginning of January, due at the end of January, okay? The reason for that one-month delay for new students is, A, they're not usually registered at that point. For example, a new student might not be registered until halfway through August, so it wouldn't make sense to bill them at the beginning of August. As well as, they're getting settled, they don't know what's going on yet, we're giving them a little bit of leeway. Okay? The other big deadline is at the beginning of April when we bill for the summer term, okay? If they are registered, and again, if we bill someone, okay, so Marcella, you're registering for a summer course, you're registered in March. Would you get a bill in April?
Yes.
Okay. Sonia, you are registered in a summer course and you register in April. Are you going to get in the middle of April? Are you going to get a bill in April?
No.
Exactly. So if they're not registered, we can't bill you. So for a summer student who doesn't register for their summer course until May, we'll only get a bill in June. Okay? It does confuse students because you know how the summer term works, that you may only be taking a two-week class in the middle of July, but we're giving you a bill in April because that's when you were registered. You're reserving a spot in the class. We expect for you to pay for it, but it does cause a little bit of grumpiness with the students. It's just the way our system is set up. If you're registered, you're going to be assessed. Okay? So those are the three majors. So you've got August and September, December, January, and April. Okay? And interest. We do charge interest. It is 1.24% per month on the outstanding billed balance. Okay? All those words are very important. So it's 1.24% per month, which comes out, I think, to 14.88% for the year. So it's not an insignificant interest charge when you're looking at it in annual, because like most credit cards are like 18 or 19%. We only charge interest on something we've billed. So back to the example, I go on a shopping spree for $1,000. I get a bill. I don't pay anything. So I don't pay anything, and I spend $500 more. At the end of the month, Visa is going to charge me interest on the $1,000 that they billed me for, but I didn't pay. The next $500, they're going to get me next month. We work the same way. So a student registers at the beginning. We charge them in August. They get a lab charge halfway through August. They don't pay anything. At the end of August, we're only going to charge them interest on what was on their initial bill, not on those charges that haven't been billed yet. going back to just our philosophy of we're not going to expect payment or penalize you for not paying something we haven't sent you an invoice for. So if we want to look at an overall, this is just an example of a monthly cycle. Okay, the same thing happens over and over every month. So we're looking at this year as an example. August 4th is when we sent out the first e-bill notifications. We don't send paper bills anymore, only in very extreme circumstances when a student fills out a special form and we make them jump through hoops. So it's an e-bill. They get an email notification to their McGill email address. Per our policy, if you don't check your email address, that's no excuse for not paying your bill. Okay? The e-bill is sent out, and there's actually a PDF of their bill that's available on Minerva for them to view. And we keep about 18 months' worth of e-bills on their account. So it's like they received a paper bill at home. Okay? This paper bill, this PDF, never changes. So they got a bill. They paid the bill. If they go back and look at that same PDF document, it's not going to change. Okay? We have other ways in Minerva of looking at their current account balance, and I'm going to show you those different forms on Thursday. Okay? That's a very, very common mistake. So that's why I like the analogy of a Visa bill. It's like you received your Visa bill at home. It's not numbers aren't going to magically change on it in the middle of the month. Okay? So this year, August 4th was when we billed. The 28th was the due date. We don't charge interest for another 2 to 3 days later. It's what we call our unofficial grace period. The reason for that is that if a student pays through online banking, which is the payment option we like to push, if they pay on the 28th, depending on their bank, it's going to take 2 to 3 business days before we actually get the money. So we're nice and we give them this unofficial grace period. For example, this year we didn't charge interest before September 3rd. Okay? Not everyone is like that. Concordia, for example, their rule is that the money has to be in your account at Concordia by the deadline. Otherwise, you get charged interest. We're a little nicer in this respect. Okay, and so then the cycle repeats itself. You get billed. It's due. Anything not paid gets charged interest. Then we send you another bill. Typically, we send the bill the next day after interest is charged. So that bill is going to show their previous balance, any new charges, any new payments, any interest charges if they didn't pay, and the new amount to pay at the end of the next month. Okay? Questions about the billing cycle? No? Yes?
Just a comment about the housing charges. It often weirds out students a little bit that they're, you know, everywhere else in the world your rent is due on the first of the month.
Yes, thank you.
Billed on the first of the month, but because of the way the billing cycle works here, they don't actually have to pay it until the end of the month. So they sort of get an unofficial grace period for their rent as well.
But yes.
It does sometimes take a while for that to process.
Exactly. Which is why we encourage them. If you want to pay sooner, you can go ahead and pay sooner. We have no problems with that. Yes, Marcella?
We're talking like, for example, the tuition fees are due by the end of September.
Yes. That's a great question. So Marcella's asking, what fees are billed per month? So we know tuition and fees are billed up front. Okay? Per month is residence charges, lab, DAS lab and printing charges, if they have any, or items that they come on monthly, interest charges, and that's really it. All the other fees that come on is not necessarily each month, but it's based on whether they had a fine to pay or they topped up a meal plan. So that's the type of thing they may see like on a November bill. Typically, we have not as many November bills because students have paid all their fees. The only thing due is rent, maybe some printing charges, items like that. Yep.
So all the little different fees like the SSMU fees, those are fees?
Yes. So when we talk about tuition and fees, which are the fees that are charged at the start of each term, we're talking about tuition, the administrative fees, which are copyright, transcript, diploma, infotech, the student society fees, those are charged at the beginning of each term, and in the fall term, health and dental. Okay? Everything else is kind of an ad hoc charge, depending on when they use that service or housing, and that's a monthly charge. Just a note for housing, some housing is an 8-month lease and some is an 11-month lease, okay? Depending on whether they're in one of the residences or one of the more housings or Solon, okay? Yes, any other questions? No? Okay, this is kind of a good place for me for us to take a break. Do you want to say 10 minutes and be back at 10 o'clock? Okay, thanks.